This is the D-Word Podcast, where we talk dementia. Welcome along to another edition of the D-Word Podcast. Now, dementia villages are still something that most people don't know about. There's been pioneering work in the Netherlands, and now Canada has its very own dementia village at Langley, just outside Vancouver. And it's all thanks to the vision of Elroy Jesperson. Well, Elroy, it's a real pleasure to welcome you as my guest here on the D-Word. Not only founder of the village in Langley, but I've just learned a fellow Toronto Blue Jays fan. So, we can have a lot to talk about. And, it's Canada's first dementia village. How did it all happen? How did it all come about?
Well, it was, even though it came about relatively quickly, it was a long process in my mind. I had spent about 30 years operating, managing, developing senior communities in Western Canada. And as I was doing that, I began to realize that there was one group of people who would live with us that we really struggled to try to find a good environment for them to thrive in. And that was people who were living with symptoms of dementia. And so I looked around and everybody was doing the same sort of thing. And I said, there has to be some other better way to do things. And so I started doing research and I discovered what they call the small house model, or in the US it's called the greenhouse project, and where 10 or 12 people would live in a very residential looking designed house and would be supported by the same group of people. And I thought, well, that really makes a lot of sense. Maybe we should look to do something like that. Then in about 2013, 2012, I learned about De Hogeve in the Netherlands and, looked at a video that had been done about De Hogeve, and I said, it's different than Canada, Europe, the styles, etc., but the concept of having a place where people can gather, creating a community where people can hang out and do normal things, was something that really resonated with me. So I said, why don't we see if we can take those two components and create this village where we have several of these small houses with a community center, and hopefully we can find enough property land so that we can really connect with nature and make it a natural setting where people can live their life their way. And so fortunately, we were able to find some land after about 2 years of looking, and ended up purchasing unused school site in Langley, British Columbia. That's why it's the village Langley. And it was on 7 acres, well-treed around three sides of the irregular-shaped property. And we knocked the school down and started building. And in 2019, we opened with space homes for 75 people.
You make it sound very easy, Elroy. You know, we knocked the school down and just got it started. But you had that dream, and you're inspired by the local work in the Netherlands. And we've actually had them on the show, and it's a marvelous development. But what kind of reaction did you get from people that hadn't seen that and were used to the kind of traditional method of care, if I can call it that?
Well, what really motivated me to do it, because as I say, I was thinking about this for a fairly long time, was when I would start talking to people about what could be possible, most people got really excited and they would say, oh, that sounds like a great idea. Where can I look at it? And I said, well, you can't, because it hasn't been built yet. So it really caused me to start thinking, well, what is our purpose to do this? Why would we do this? And We landed on the purpose. It's to demonstrate a better way to enrich the lives of the people we serve. And two parts of that. One was we needed to show people that it is possible and it is better. And the whole focus was to enrich lives, not necessarily to focus on health care, even though many people need health care to live an enriched life. So it was those two focuses. And so we did it. We started, we built it. And then when we had our grand opening, we had been, we had social media and we had attention and people poured through. And I have yet to ever hear one person say, I don't think this is would be for me. It's so naturally right that it just feels good. Just the environment, like somebody said, this looks like a place in Disneyland. I mean, we have the colored houses, we have the, the trees, and so it is a very tranquil, nice, upbeat setting. So I think people, the response is overwhelming. The one downside, because we did this all privately, we talked to government. Government is doing what they do, which is what they normally have done for many years. And so we said, we can't wait for government to do this. We have to do it again to demonstrate to them, hopefully, that it is better. And so it is very expensive to live there, just as it's expensive to live where the government subsidizes your support. And many people would love to live there but can't. And that's sort of the downside. And it's only, I think, in the future, if varying partners come together contributing what they can, including government agencies, to make it more affordable for more people. But the model itself is, in my mind, superior to most anything else out there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've done the virtual tour on the website, and just through that virtual tour, I'm thinking, hey, I'm walking around this really nice little village in British Columbia. The street lights, everything. It just, feels like a home.
Well, it was an interesting thing was when we were starting to get ready after we acquired the land, and we were talking to our architectural firm that we had used for several other projects. And I started talking about how this was going to be different and how we needed these small houses and whatnot. And the fellow, the architect, says, "Oh, well, here, let me go and I'll sort of do a overall general design and come back." And he came back and I looked at that picture and I said, I didn't want a big box store. I wanted a village. I said, if that's the best you can do from what I explained, then we need a new architect because you're missing the mark. He was thinking facility. He was thinking what he normally did, trying to make it a little softer, but he missed the mark. And fortunately, he had an associate that was working for him who said, I want to meet you for coffee because I think I have an idea. And he laid out, he had some little paper houses and he laid them out all on the table. And he said, if we did this and built it like this from the outside, it would look like a village, but inside it would be a house of 7,500 square feet. And I said, well, now you're talking. Now that's what I'm thinking about. And so it was because of the associate that he had that really understood what we were trying to do, that we did what we did. Because if we would have relied on the traditional architectural firms that traditionally built care facilities, we wouldn't have gotten what we did.
The station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
Research has proved how important music can be in dementia care, and our friends at Music for Dementia have just released their Make Music Easy campaign, which does exactly what it says, aims to make music more accessible for everyone. You can find out more at musicfordementia.org.uk. Back to my guest now, Elroy Jesperson. You know, I guess you would have been looking at long corridors and, you know...
Absolutely.
Like you say, the traditional approach. I get, you know, the infrastructure in the building is one thing, but you've also got to have the staff that, one, buy into it and are trained appropriately as well, don't you?
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, when I started, I had this pretty well... conceptualized, and I say to people, I'm a conceptual thinker. I'm not a detailed thinker, and I know that in order to make it work, you need the details all figured out. So that's why I say I need some partners to who think and see that way to help bring my concept into reality. And so I said, before we started, I needed to make sure that everybody kind of understood what the vision was. And so I ended up saying, we're going to have five guiding principles that will sort of keep us on track. And the first one was be bold and be different. And I knew that if we didn't break a few rules and bump into a few obstacles, we would never get anywhere. And I knew that if we looked to what was and wanted to just kind of tweak it, we would not get anywhere. So we had to be bold and we had to be different in order to stand out. And the second one was make home. We aren't talking about facilities. We're talking about homes. We're talking about homes where people want to live, feel comfortable living. The third one was think normal, natural nature. And we wanted to have normal life in a natural way, in a natural setting, surrounded by nature and connected to nature. And the other one was roam free. And probably one of the biggest issues around supporting people with dementia is that we tend to want to lock them in a secure unit and for their safety. But what that does is just makes them upset and frustrated, as I would be, I'm sure most people would be. And so what we said, we have to build a place where people can wake up in the morning, walk out of their bedroom, walk out the front door of their house, walk around the village without any physical or psychological barriers getting in their way. And so that meant that we had to do our houses at grade, no steps, no elevators. We couldn't put a second floor, which from a financial point of view really minimized the amount of people we could put on. But if we honored that principle, then we had to do it. And so that's why the village looks like that. So people could roam about. And certainly that's probably the one, if you would ask families of villagers who live there, it's the fact that they can roam, that they can walk, they can move when they want, where they want, with whom they want, without having somebody say, no, you can't go there. And then the fifth one was, it's always villager-directed living, supported by person-centered care. And it's always about the villager living their own best life, directing their life, and we provide whatever support and care they need in order to do that. So that's what we really focused on as we went through the process. But I talk about, we have the four pillars that will make a village. And the first one is we have to have the right paradigm or the right mindset, the right philosophy. And our paradigm is, we call it enriched living. And it's all about how can we enrich the lives of each person who lives at the village. And I took what the Eden Alternative Organization in the United States did around work around domains of well-being. And they said there are seven domains of well-being that each of us, anybody, needs to have enhanced in order for them to have a well-being experience. And so we took those and we added three more. And for example, you know, identity, to being known, to having your identities known and being honored and respected for who you are as a person. And we all have several identities, being connected to things and people that matter to you, feeling secure, having agency and autonomy to make your own decisions when you want to make them, you know, being able to serve and support and help others in your community, even as, though you may need help. Service is a two-way street, you know, having a purpose, having a reason to get up in the morning, something purposeful to do, and then experiencing joy, moments of joy. And so we focus on that as our paradigm, and we try to get everybody focused on that, even though we're providing a whole lot of care and support to some people in order to do that. But it's all about enriching lives as opposed to delivering care. Then the second one is you need the right place. And we think we're not bad on the right place. We are tweaking it a little bit, trying to make it better. The third one is the right people. And as you said, we need the right people doing the right things in the right way at the right time. And after operating for 6 years, we find that's probably one of the biggest challenges, just because the system that we all operate in train people a certain way, people learn how to do things a certain way, and it's not certainly about enriching lives necessarily. It's all about performing tasks and ticking boxes. And so having to get people who are very well-meaning and who very much want to do what we're saying we do, we have to support them and help them change the way they've always done things. And that is an ongoing challenge, especially when, you know, we get staff turnover and we get different people coming and going. That will forever be a challenge that we'll have to work on. And the fourth pillar is we need the right partners. No one organization, no one group can do this by themselves. They need to bring in other like-minded people who have the skills and the resources in certain areas they don't, and partner together to make it happen. So those are the four pillars that, you know, I think any organization would need to build and create a village. And I think it's very possible to do. What I see now when I talk to people, finding the right place, the right piece of property that's big enough that will allow you to do what you want to do, and then finding the people with the money that will support you are the two biggest challenges. Once you get beyond that, then it's pretty smooth sailing. There's some bumps, but you've taken off.
Yeah, you're still making it sound easy, Elroy, and I'm sure it was a lot of hard work. I mean, earlier on you talked about people requiring some form of medical care, which is, you know, incumbent with people in any sort of residential setting. But I guess you must get better clinical outcomes from people living in such a nice environment. You know, I assume that, you know, you'd have less hospital admissions, and the chance to go out and enjoy the environment has got to be good for people's health.
Yeah, well, anecdotally, we know that. And certainly our medical director tells us that, yes, people, you know, are not going to the hospital as much. People are living longer than I would expect them to live. What we have just started to do now, and always one of the partners we were looking for is post-secondary educational institutions who could do research. And I know you're probably very familiar with this, but the green farming concept that is in certainly in the UK as well as Europe. There's only two green farms in Canada, and they're both in Ontario. And so I had a couple of professors approach and say, what you have at the village is pretty much what they have on a green farm. And would you be interested in formalizing that a bit? And we have funds to do some research. And so we just started this summer where we have a day program where people from the outside community come in and join with people who are already living at the village. And we do a day program based back in our farm where they're helping care for the animals and they're working in the garden and they're doing outside activities in this natural setting. And the researchers are doing research on the effects of that program in that environment so that we can have some documentation to show people, yes, it is positive, it is better, it is worth the dollars it costs to create this environment because the outcomes were ultimately better. So that will be an ongoing work in progress. But I personally believe that, I sometimes say when we have somebody who gets a little agitated, or if I get a little agitated, my wife will say, well, why don't you go and take a walk, walk it off? And I do, and I can. But if you live in a traditional place, you can't take a walk and you can't walk it off. At the village, they can. They can get out, they can walk, they can forget about what their problem was or cool down and come back. So, we try to create that sort of normal situation where people, when they get upset, aren't confined, aren't told to calm down, aren't medicated.
I think, again, involved with the community as well is a great way of spreading the word, because there's a lot of stigma around dementia as a condition. And also a lot of that is brought about what we've been talking about, the kind of institutional settings that you find people in. And I guess people who are seeing, the village for the first time, it must be a real eye-opener.
Yeah, and I guess it's really... I say the one thing during COVID that really would identify a villager from a non-villager is that the non-villagers had to wear a mask, whereas villagers didn't. And so people would walk through and say, why isn't that person wearing a mask? They're mid-50s, perhaps. Well, they live here. They're a villager. And so they begin to see people. Because at the end of the day, that's what it's all about. We're all people, and we all are different, and we all have different issues and concerns and diseases. But they begin to see people and how they are all different, but yet they're still people. Even though they need some support and they need to live in an environment that's somewhat protective and secure, but they're not all old, and they're not all whatever stereotype you might have about somebody with dementia. They're unique. And so I think that's one of the ways that we can help educate people is by having all sorts of people come through the village and look and see and engage with the villagers. And we have some pretty rocking pub nights once a month where we get it, an entertainer in there, and he sings all the 60s songs, and people are up and dancing, young, old. And like, I took a picture one time and I say, what dementia? There isn't, you couldn't see anybody that you would think had dementia. It was just people having fun. And sort of that's the type of environment we want to create so that people will say, I can hardly wait until I move into there. And actually, I did have one man who was waiting to move in, and his daughter brought him, and he was so excited about being able to come and being able to be a part of this. And I'm thinking, Where else are you going to see somebody this excited about moving into a care facility? Nowhere.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
The UK Health Radio Awards 2025 are just around the corner, but once more we have a dementia support category with five nominees who've done outstanding work in the field. The winner will be decided by your votes, so watch out for details of how to get involved at ukhealthradio.com. My guest on this edition is Elroy Jesperson, founder of The Village Langley. I guess, you know, you get more involvement, I guess, from family members as well, because for a family member visiting a normal institutional setting, it's a bit glum, isn't it? You know,
yes. Where,
you know, if you're coming to The Village Langley, you can, you know, hang out in the, you know, in the cafe or go to the farm or, and it's, you know, it must be a pleasurable thing.
Yeah, and we really encourage, and we do often have family members bring grandchildren, go and see grandma and hang out and, you know, have a coffee and go and check out the goats and the chickens. And it's like an outing. It's like going to grandma on the farm, right? It's not, they don't see that this is a different type of a place. It's just a place. And there are all sorts of people who live there. And it's, you know, it's very normal. And that's what we strive to be, create normal, whatever that is for a person.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, you said it earlier in the conversation, everyone is different. You met one person with dementia, you've met one person with dementia, as they say. And so it must be so, you know, my friends who are living with dementia, they say that the first things they ever hear is don't. When they get a diagnosis, don't do this, don't do that, whatever. And they are always saying, well, tell me what I can do, not why I can't. And there's so much in the village that people can actually do.
Yeah, absolutely. I think one thing I've learned as I've, you know, over the years connected more with people living with dementia is everybody has their own reality. And it may be quite different from mine. And I learned to just get into their reality. And if they're talking about something that I think may have happened many years ago, I'm not correcting them and saying, no, 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 no. I'm saying, oh, tell me about that. Oh, that sounds very interesting because, you know, it doesn't matter. You know, it doesn't matter if the story they're telling me, they're a teenager and now I'm looking at an 84-year-old person. It's where they are and where they need to be, and I need to join them in that story and in that journey and create a very positive connection with them. And so that's one thing I've learned, to not correct people or tell them that's not right, but just sort of get into their reality and walk with them, figuratively walk with them and support them and be a friend, probably be a friend.
Yeah, you know, you absolutely hit it spot on there in terms of, I always equate it to, it's almost like learning another language because you're, you know, you're actually going into another reality. And once you accept that, things become a lot clearer. I mean, in terms of staff as well, I guess the people that work at the village, you must get great satisfaction from working in that kind of setting.
Well, I when I talk about the right people and people say, well, what do you mean by the right people? I say, first of all, I'm going to look for a person who, in my words, who are called to serve. No matter what job they're doing, they need to be in service of something or somebody. So, whether that be working in retail in the service department, whether that be a healthcare person, they have a need to be needed to be. And so if they're called to serve, then they're going to get their satisfaction and their purpose out of being of service. So if they do that, and then if they get really excited about our paradigm and how they see themselves really helping and supporting people to live their own best life, then in my mind, we're halfway there of getting the right person. We can teach them some of the skills they have, but basically they need to bring their own personality. They need to bring their own passions to the village and share them with the villagers. So if they're artists, we have some great staff who love to sing and dance, and we sometimes have impromptu dance parties breaking out on Main Street in the middle of the afternoon because somebody starts singing a song and other people join in. And so that's what helps create this natural uplifting environment, as opposed to, okay, I've checked off my things. What am I supposed to do now? Or I'm going to rush and get Mary dressed and fed, and then I'm going to move her into the living room, and I'm going on to somebody else, and Mary sits there with nothing to do. And so, it's about engaging the person. And so we need people who bring those sort of skills. By and large, they can be taught, how to help bathe somebody, how to take somebody to the toilet. They can be taught skills that we need, but you are who you are. And if we can find the right people, then they can flourish. They can get immense satisfaction for doing that, and everybody benefits.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess, time's running to a close, sadly. But big question in the end then, I suppose, is that how do you find those people in government who write the policies, who write the dementia strategies, to actually believe in a concept that you and I know works very well? But as you said right at the beginning of the conversation, they're obviously versed in everything that's happened over the last 50 years, and it's all looked the same. And then suddenly you come in with a brand new picture.
Well, before we opened our doors, and I guess we were at what I call a disadvantage in that we were totally new and we didn't have existing staff. So we had to build a whole new team. And so we had to bring people in, and while we were building and toward the end, do a bit of an orientation. So we had job fairs and we had information meetings, and we had about 350 people who had signed up to get more information because they would say, "This is something I dreamt about, this is something I'd heard about, but and this is even in some cases, this is something I was taught in school, but when I got out into the workforce, I had to do different." And so now, if I could do what I was taught to do, oh, that would be wonderful. So we had this group of people that were really buying in, really keen to make this work, and then we started, and then unfortunately, when COVID hit and people got shuffled around, and we had people who were working at one or two places in a job they could only work at one. We had a great shifting of staff, and that really kind of set us back for a couple of years because then the attention was keep people COVID free no matter what. Infection control, the whole thing, and enriched living kind of took a back seat. So the other thing about staff and what I've learned is, yeah, the hands-on service team that support villagers day in and day out is absolutely important. But equally or more important is the leaders that you put together to lead those people. because they're the ones that have to reinforce what we need reinforced. They have to be teachers, they have to mentor, they have to demonstrate by their own actions. And so if you don't get the right leaders, things can take a turn pretty quickly. And so in an ideal situation, if somebody already is operating in the healthcare business or area and want to build a new village, during the time the village is building, you could handpick the staff they have and spend enough time with the support and re-education so that when you move into the new place, they're already a cohesive team. They already have a lot of that learning done. We had to kind of hit the ground running, which was a limitation. We're still working on that. And in my mind, we'll always be working on that to make it better. But the more you can get to where we want to go, the better it can be for many things. So that's one of our challenges, that it will always be there.
Well, I think you've done an amazing job. I think it's a great project, and I wish you every success in the future. And hopefully we'll get, village Langleys popping up everywhere, because I think it's a great concept. And Elroy, just thanks so much for being my guest. I have to say, go Jays, go, before I leave you. But it's been really great.
Great. Yes, I agree. My fingers are both crossed. So let's hope we experience good things in October. And thank you very much. One last thing. If anybody, I've had guests from all over the world come and look at the village. And so if anybody is in Canada, and certainly in British Columbia, and are interested in the village, reach out to the village and say they'd like a tour. And by, if I'm available, I probably will give them a tour. And so, that's how the word spreads. The more people see what we're doing, the better.
Well, sounds like a great offer. Thanks a lot, Roy.
Okay, thank you, Pete.
Thanks to Elroy for telling his inspirational story. And do have a look at the website, verveseniorliving.com, and take that virtual tour. Well, that's all we have time for on this edition. Thanks for your company, and I hope you join me again soon for some more Dementia Talk on the D Word Podcast.